What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I have another very interesting CEO guest today. I think, you know, sometimes when we start a business, we are accidental entrepreneurs. I know I call myself an accidental entrepreneur. I never really actually meant to go start a business, but I just like had to, right? And there was no big business plan or anything like that. But I think Paige, our guest today, said to herself, okay, I'm laid off. I'm pregnant. What do I do now? And she found a partner who was willing to talk with her about what to do next. And they found this little niche in the market and started trying to help people get remote workers. Now, this was not during COVID. This was like 11 or 12 years ago before remote was a thing, right? Before remote help of any kind was really a big thing. There was, you know, some offshore and stuff like that, but they really were ahead of their time. And they started out and it grew and grew into what it is today, which we're going to find out more about. So welcome, Paige McFeely from Base. Thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Alice. So happy to be here.
So tell us just a little bit about what Base does today before we rewind and go back and hear the whole story.
Yes, absolutely. So like you said, we almost are 12 years old. And what we focus on is connecting leaders with great remote executive assistants, and then actually giving them both the resources to do their jobs better and more effectively as this unit. And where we really, really spend a lot of time focusing is on that match. So we've built some tools in the back end to help us do that, and then tools to help everybody work together better. But we really want to get you that right fit, because such a critical component that I think is just glossed over most of the time.
Yeah. And I'll say this, most of the CEOs that I work with should have an executive assistant, and they don't. But I think they feel like, they're trying to grow their company. It's an added expense. If they have an executive assistant and the other leaders don't, you know, they have all these funny feelings around them. Like, no, don't you understand? You will be so much more efficient. Your team will love you. This person is going to make you better. They'll make you go faster. They'll make you go farther. Like, it is such an important role at a company. And the other piece of this that I love that you've figured out is it's so hard. Like, how do you hire a great EA? And how do you know they're going to be great until you've hired them and got them in the seat? But because you have this proprietary way of doing the matching, you can really help people make a good pick, which I think is just phenomenal. So we're going to come back to that, but let's go back to the beginning when you got laid off. What were you doing? What kind of job did you have? And then how did you come up with this idea?
Yeah. So you hit it. I was laid off. I had been working in advertising before that. I was working in a big corporate company headquarters. Very, very pregnant in a brand new city that we had just moved to, because I was told I could do my job there remotely. Then surprise, I'm laid off. And so I didn't have any connections in the city. I didn't know what to do. It was very, very stressful. And then I knew I had a maternity leave coming up. It was my first child. Yeah. And so I do what I do when I'm, concerned or I don't know what to do. I just talk to people and started to see some trends, and I'm a very verbal processor. And so started to realize, there are people that also want to work remotely. It's really hard to find great remote work back then. And there were also people that needed help, but they didn't necessarily need someone sitting right in the same room with them. Maybe they were solopreneurs or they traveled a lot or whatever have you. So we started putting the pieces together, and then almost immediately we're like, this was a little bit bigger opportunity than we thought it was. And so we started hiring people, and then we just tried to play catch up for the first 5 or 6 years, because it is such a social thing, right? You're talking
so much demand, right? And you, who
so
knew?
Much demand. Yeah. Yeah. Not us.
So you started as 33 Vincent and operated that way for a while, and you were helping people find remote workers that were executive assistants. So you were vetting these people, you know, finding high quality people, but then you ran out of people and the demand was so great, you had a waiting list. All right. So what happened next?
Yeah. So that's our product, right? Is finding these excellent executive assistants who are ready to launch. Right when you find them, they need to be ready to jump in with you. And so we were finding some needles in a haystack because remote work, again, was not all that common back then. But our clients were telling their friends about us. And so referrals were coming in way faster than we could fill. And I think typically when people come to us, they're like, I needed an assistant 2 months ago. I'm desperate. Please just give me any help. And we're like, oh, sorry. Yeah, you have to wait 2 months. Like, that did not fly. And so we started just racking our brains and scouring the internet. Are there any tools, any resources that we can give these 1099 contractors who we can't say, go do this job this way, that instead we could kind of build it in with all the best practices and foundations that we know to be true, assuming that we could find the talent with kind of the raw skills that they needed. We thought we could use software to build on top of that.
Oh, so you thought you could use the software to give them more capacity.
More capacity, but also help them become a great assistant faster.
Ah, got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we really wanted to be able to create profiles for our clients to say, here you go, you're off and running. So spoiler, nothing existed, not even remotely close to that.
Right. I was just going to say, I don't even know, like maybe there is today, but I don't even know of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not really. And so like, okay, now we need to build software. We know nothing about this. We were self-funded up until that point. Don't know a thing about software engineering or where to start. No investors, nothing.
But you knew what you wanted the software to do, right? And that's important.
Exactly. We had this great idea, but we couldn't fund it ourselves. And so we knew we needed to do something. So we started a second company, which is Base. And that started to be the first ever purpose-built software for executive assistants. And so that was stood up in late 2018.
Oh my gosh. All right. So here are these two women working remotely, finding remote workers for everyone, deciding to build software out of the blue and started Base. Now, did you have to get funding to build the software? How did that all work?
We sure did. Yes, we sure did. And in that period of time, my co-founder Casey and I had each welcomed collectively three sons to the world, or six sons, three each.
Oh my
God. All boys, six boys that we were like juggling all of this. And so what we decided to do was we would have Base be a separate company from 33 Vincent, and Base would be the thing that got venture funding. We could probably have a whole other podcast dedicated to the journey of that. But it really is sales too, right?
Like it becomes a full-time job, right? To raise money. That is a full-time job and it is absolutely sales. No doubt about it.
Right. And so that process was trial by fire. I was the one that stepped over to Base to be the CEO of Base, and Casey stayed on at 33 Vincent. And I did not know what I didn't know, which I knew nothing. So it was a very trying experience, but we did end up raising money, which at that point we had moved to South Carolina. I had my three babies really at the time because we accidentally started business and then accidentally had kids and took us together.
Right.
A bit of a trend here. But at that point, I believe I was the only woman that had raised a seed round in my city, but I think in the state, there was some record that was broken by it. And so I was in the newspaper and people were talking about me, people were like coming to me in the city. And I was like, yes, this was hard. And yes, I'm very proud, but also like, this shouldn't be so mind blowing because there are lots of men raising money here. And so that really, I think, planted a seed that is coming to fruition now of really trying to unlock the potential of leaders, but especially women who we just have different burdens that we're carrying around with us. So also compared to another podcast.
We absolutely have different burdens. There is no doubt. Any woman who has started her own company, whether bootstrapped or getting funding, knows that it is a completely different journey than a man has. And we do it all while having babies, taking care of babies, taking care of teenagers, taking care of elderly parents. Some of us are elderly parents and grandchildren like me right now, right? Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, we have, you know, the added societal, cultural, we don't fund women, like in the back of these people's brains somehow, right? Yeah. So that makes it harder. And then I think the thing a lot of people forget about is all that while of having babies, and then after having babies, we're going through hormonal changes that impact our brain, impact our body, and yet we're still muscling through all of that to make our businesses work. I mean, how crazy is that?
Yes, exactly. It's something that we've been talking a lot about as an organization, of this invisible backpack that we carry around with us. And I think the realization, a lot of women at my team were mostly female. Most of us are parents as well. So this realization of like, hey, no one else put this backpack on our back full of expectations and burdens. Like, I actually did that myself. And I'm the one that shoved it full of all these things. Like, I had to have a great manicure before I went into a pitch. Like, I didn't need to, but that felt like an absolute requirement because of the stakes and who I was going in to present to. I had to be completely buttoned up. So in fact, we now, because there is a higher hurdle for women, we now offer a different hourly rate to women when they come join us, just because we all need assistance, but women especially need assistance.
Oh my gosh, seriously. I mean, and it's hard. I feel like for women, especially female CEOs, it's hard for them to spend money on themselves in their business because they're looking at everybody else and all of the other needs. And they're such caretakers, and they just really don't feel like they can spend that money. And yeah, it's not true. Again, male or female CEO, you will fly higher, faster, be so much better if you have the right help in place. And it's just so, so important. Oh my goodness. All right. So let's talk a little bit about how you grew the business and how you grew sales, because I'm sure in the beginning you guys were doing founder-led sales, and lucky for you, like everybody wishes they had all these referrals, right? So right. I imagine you weren't doing a ton of outbound, but in the very beginning, how did you get your very first clients?
It was all talking, storytelling, trust building, talking. Like, kind of, as I said earlier, I talk to people to help process things, and there's always a thread you can pull, or almost always a thread you can pull in those conversations of like, oh, I know somebody that you might be interested in speaking to. And then maybe that person knows somebody who needs help. And that's how we got our first client. And that's how we continued to get clients probably for far too long, because it was such a good problem to have and a hard problem to solve on the supply side. It took us a really, really long time to build the outbound muscle and figure out how to actually bring in leads. Because what we began to see over the years was the referrals that were coming in had slowly evolved into not our ideal customer. And so then we were like, now what do we do? Like, we don't have any muscles of figuring out how to get clients. And so it felt like, even though we were many years old by that point, we were starting from scratch and figuring out what is our sales playbook and how do we generate leads.
So it was you and your partner in the beginning talking to people that got you your first clients. Sounds like you didn't add any salespeople for quite a while because you had so much demand, you didn't need to, right?
Yeah.
But you made a really interesting point I want to hit on for all the CEOs out there listening, which is I'm a huge proponent of referrals. I love them. I think they're fantastic. Like, everybody should do more to get referrals and build, you know, a referral system at their company and teach their salespeople how to get referrals. But what you said is so important. Sometimes those referrals are not your ideal customer. And if you've got a flood of them coming in that are not your ideal customer, that simply doesn't work, right? You either have to have a place to refer them to, or you're just saying no a lot. And so that is a really important point. Also, there does come a point when you're growing that referrals just won't be enough business. Like, they're great at first, they can really power you, but then they're just not going to be enough. So we have to get beyond that. But I will also say that we can train the referrers a little bit, which we kind of forget. Like, when we say to them, oh my gosh, we love your referrals, this is who we're looking for, right? And give them the word so they know, oh, this person is a great fit and this person would not be. But yeah, that's so interesting. So the two of you were doing all the sales. Now you probably had to start getting some help with implementation. So where's the point where you started hiring someone to take all these great, you know, everybody wants an EA. Now who's managing that part of it? Were the two of you doing all of that as well?
Pretty early on, we figured out how complementary Casey's and my skill sets are, which also very, very lucky that two friends could work together so well and had complementary skill sets. And she really loved managing the EAs and the inside of the company, the finances, all of the operations and logistics. And I really loved being on the external and the client facing side. So pretty early on, I was the one taking all of the sales calls. As that began to become too much for just me to handle, we brought somebody in who could take them from the point of sales. We're lucky in the sense that we have a pretty short sales cycle. Oftentimes it's one phone call because the timing is so critical. So if we get that right, people are ready to say yes.
That they're like, please help me, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so then we had somebody who was a very seasoned, wonderful EA who became their touch point for their journey and their experience of working with 33 Vincent at the time. And then she would help get them set up with their new executive assistant and check in regularly from there. That was our first hire.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, that sounds like a good split. And like you said, very lucky that she was good at the operations end and you were good at the sales end. So that worked out perfectly. And then you hired some sales help that could take some of these inbound calls. Now at this point where it slowed down and you were like, oh my gosh, these inbounds are not our ideal customer. What happened at that point? What did you do?
A lot of trial and error. We hired different consultants. We had different demand gen people that we brought in. We really leaned heavily into brand and marketing, and we were just kind of trying out everybody's playbooks to see what fit. And the timing is so critical that we found pretty quickly paid advertising doesn't really do much for us. We wasted a lot of time and money trying to validate what we probably knew from the start. And it took us about 12 to 18 months of scrambling and figuring out what the heck we needed to do to fill the top of our funnel. And really where we've landed is still storytelling, but being more strategic about it, just getting our name out there, because someone might listen to this podcast and then 6 months later decide that they're finally ready for an EA and be like, oh wait, I heard about someone. Let me go look that up. And that's where our leads come from now, but it's very long-term play.
Yeah. So you're not alone in trying to figure out how to keep the top of the funnel full. I mean, and today especially, I know it's a problem every single one of my clients has. And as I, you know, watch LinkedIn and other sources, seems like everybody's having trouble filling the top of the funnel. So it's one of the things I'm trying to really help people with these days. But so you tried a lot of things. I'm glad you tried them and then decided they didn't work, because you have to try some things sometimes to know, right? And every company's different. Advertising works great for some companies and not so good for others. So you do have a bit of trial and error there. Even when you have like a really good outside marketing strategist helping you, we just don't always know, right, until we try some things. But you said you landed on something that was really important. So repeat that and tell us more about it.
I think you're referring to storytelling. It's kind of a bigger
storytelling and so important. Bigger scale. So when you say storytelling, now everybody's going, so, okay, how did you do it? Like, did you write stories on LinkedIn? Did you have a blog? What did you do? Did you have events? So tell us what you did.
It's mostly been LinkedIn. That's been a really valuable tool, but then leaning into the connections that we are making. So it's not just posting things on LinkedIn and liking other people's posts. It's having conversations like this. And then when I meet someone new thinking, oh my gosh, they would be great on Alice's podcast, I should send them their way. And maintaining that network of connections that is built in trust and lifting one another up. And it's so slow going and it's very hands-on, but we're also not a huge business. So it helps us also bring clients in who get what we're trying to do instead of someone who just, you know, Googled us.
Yes. So I love that you're talking about the connection, because what a lot of people do is they go out and they connect with other people that seem to be their ideal customer on LinkedIn, but then they never do anything else, right?
Right.
We have to help, right? We have to nurture our network. So once we connect with people, it's like, what can I do for you? Can I introduce you? Can I refer you to someone to be on their podcast? Like, here's some content that would really help you. Like, we have to stay with them and nurture them and actually build those relationships. So then when they're ready, they remember us and they come back, right? Now, you also have a YouTube channel, right?
Yes, yes, we do.
How you're using that to tell stories.
Yeah, so it's a lot of kind of the same. I think you find too, when you're storytelling, you're saying a lot of the same thing, maybe from slightly different angles. So having interesting conversations with interesting people and trying to film them and share them with the world. And I'm not someone who loves to be in the spotlight at all. So it's been a very interesting personal journey for me, but I think we had enough people coming in who were genuinely curious about not just 33 Vincent and Bass's journey, but Casey's and my relationship of working together as friends, of what it's like having parents and being venture backed in that same space of time. And then I've kind of lived an abnormal or atypical journey also with my family and where we live. And so people are just interested and they want to make connections and they want to learn from one another and help. And so, that's what we spend our time doing.
So by the way, Paige moved to Spain a year ago. You can go to her LinkedIn page and see that about her journey. And she's lived in some other places as well, but she just packed up her kids and her husband and there they went. So it's really interesting what can happen when you build a life where you can do your work remotely, truly, right? Remotely and be really good at it. You get a lot of opportunities out of that. So I think that's just amazing that you've done that. So tell us where you are today with Bass, because you built it to be a software to help the EAs, but now it's sort of combined, right? So you told me earlier that Bass bought 33 Vincent. So now you have the software, but you still also place the people. So tell us what it looks like today and what you're doing to sell, like what your sales team and your delivery team looks like.
Yes. If I could plot all of the things that we've tried on a map, it would be very squirrely going all over the place. But when we started Bass, yes, you're exactly right. It was a software built for executive assistants. And it turns out executive assistants are the most wonderful, lovely people to market to. They are very receptive. They're maybe the opposite of the CEO that everybody is trying to get in front of. And they were so wonderful. And so very quickly, we built a pretty large network and community. We did a lot of events, webinars, just connecting, because it can be kind of an isolating role. But we began to hit pretty substantial roadblocks of getting the software into the organizations. EAs are not buyers at all. Typically, there are some that are set up that way, but most often they're then having to go pitch the software, which definitely didn't have a line item because it didn't exist before. And we found our stride, absolutely. But then began to realize if we can pair the software with the EA, it goes a lot faster and we get better buy-in from the executive as well, instead of adding yet another task to the EA to have to market this software on our behalf.
Right. Well, it's like, here's something you've never heard of, you know, and yeah, it costs money and, you know, we want you to buy it. Right. So that's hard even for a trained salesperson to do. So I can imagine that was a difficult, but I love bundling it. So important, right? It's like, hey, it's a package. It just comes together.
Right. Exactly. So we made that shift probably 2 years ago. We spent a lot of time developing our Bass executive assistant pool. It's not only that we match you with someone, we're doing a lot of vetting and making sure that they're great and they're going to be ready to go. But it also allows us when changes do happen, or maybe you discover 90 days in, it's not as great of a fit as we all thought. Like, we've got that pool ready to go. And so that became our central focus, is getting those great EAs matched as well as we could with the leads that we had coming in, both inbound and outbound. And we haven't looked back really since then.
Yeah. So your inbound is coming from the stories that you tell on LinkedIn and YouTube, which is wonderful. And what does your outbound program look like, and who does that?
So we've got a sales team of two individuals, and that has also been a very fluid thing. My team, we're pretty small. We're 8 people, and they're just so great. They are all people who kind of plug holes wherever they see them. So lots of job descriptions are very fluid. So I think we've all done a bit of outbound, but really what we're focusing on is just engaging with people, offering value. We see that people are frequently talking about how hard of a time they're having finding an executive assistant. But we can chime in and just give them resources. We're not trying to sell to them, but we've written a ton of guides. We have interview questions. We have ways to help you get onboarded with your executive assistant. And we find just going out into the world and adding value in a space that we can talk about extensively has been a really good thing for us.
So these two salespeople, are they using email, the phone, LinkedIn to get these stories out to the outbound work that they're doing?
It's predominantly LinkedIn. We have had pretty mediocre success with phones, some with email, but LinkedIn, if you're playing a bit of a longer game and you can actually focus on adding value and building relationship, then we can have a meaningful impact. Again, it's the 6 months later, or they used our guide to hire an EA and then maybe that didn't work out and then they come back to us.
Yeah, they tried it on their own, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is really important what you're saying, because again, everybody's trying to generate leads, right? And what's working today? What should we do? Is it ads? Is it events? Is it our events, somebody else's events? Is it, you know, storytelling? Should I have a podcast? Should I do LinkedIn Live? Like, what should we do to generate leads? And people are still relying heavily on outbound, but they're doing such a bad job, as you know. And none of us need another spammy email in our inbox or in our direct messages on LinkedIn. And what you're saying here is you are using LinkedIn really effectively because you are playing the long game. You are finding the people who are most likely to need what you sell, and then you are providing value to them and giving them, you know, hey, you can do it yourself. Here's a guide. Try, you know, you're not trying to sell to them. You're trying to add value and help them understand why an EA will help them go farther faster. Right. And I think that's just the first piece of it. And then, you know, they look to you as an expert, someone who knows and someone who's helping them. So when they are ready, now it's inbound. They're coming to you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We sit pretty unapologetically on the high end of the spectrum. We're a higher priced offering. I think we were talking about this earlier today. There are now so many options, so many great options for assistants out there, whether it's an offshore virtual assistant or onshore executive assistant. We want to sit in that really highly strategic side of things, and it's priced appropriately for that. But at the same time, like, we are all so passionate that everybody needs help. And I think an assistant is like absolutely you need help from an assistant. But just in general, if we could culturally let go of some of the baggage of having to just hold it all together ourselves and do it and know all the answers, I think we're causing ourselves collectively a whole ton of stress that we don't need. And so in that way, it's like whatever we need to tell you and give you to give yourself permission to get help in whatever form it takes, ideally an assistant, but and with us, but if not, cool. You just need help.
Yeah.
Let yourself do it.
Yeah. Well, I also like that you have a small team, but they're mighty, right? And I think one of the things today with, you know, small businesses, you know, under 50 million, under 100 million for sure, right? We seem to collect a lot of people, but they're not excellent and they're not really doing what we need them to do, right? And I'm trying to help companies slim down and like, I'd rather you had two excellent salespeople and you hire them an assistant to increase their capacity, right? Versus six and they're, you know, only one of them's hitting the quota, you know? So like, what's the point of that? Like if you've got, all these chairs filled with people who cannot meet the quota. One, maybe there's not enough business for six salespeople, right? Mm-hmm. Or two, maybe they're just not really the right people in the right seat. So I think we really have to look at, are the salespeople working to their capacity, right? Before we start adding more, because if you don't have enough leads for more salespeople, they're never going to hit their quota. So it's kind of an interesting thing. But what I found, and you know, this EA thing goes for salespeople too, right? Because if you have a couple of really good salespeople and they just need some administrative tasks taken off their plate, well, yes, AI can do some of those, but an assistant, it has changed everything for some of my clients, right? Now these salespeople are like, you're kidding. First of all, they feel like, wow, you're giving us an assistant? Amazing, right? And then they get to offload things and train this person and they become very close. And then their sales are going up and up and up. I mean, it's amazing. Why have more salespeople that aren't doing their job? Have a few that are fantastic and help them get to their capacity and help them exceed their capacity. So I think EAs can really be used in that way too.
Yes. And that one is such a good one because a salesperson's entire job is to generate revenue for your business, right? So it's a lot easier to measure versus like someone in, I don't know, finance, like how much is that EA really helping right. you grow your business? But for salespeople, having someone in, we see a lot of like RevOps coordinators or whatever, all managing all of the stuff that a salesperson has to own. What kind of brain power does that take? And if we could free up that brain power, it's not a one-to-one exchange of they spend 2 hours less, you know, every week or probably more than that on email. They're not just getting 2 hours more of time selling. Really,
it's exponential. It is literally exponential because their brains are freed of all this administrative stuff. And that's the problem. You hire a salesperson who's outgoing and they want to talk to people. And when they have to sit still and be quiet and do all this administrative stuff, it literally drains them. So it's just something I want every CEO listening to think about. Yeah. How are you supporting your salespeople? Are they sitting around doing a lot of administrative work? Because every sales leader and every CEO wants their salespeople to put everything in the database. Well, that's great. But you know what? The truth is they're not going to do it. They don't do it. And if someone else was doing it, wouldn't the world be a better place? Because now when someone else goes in to see what's happening, it's all there. And it's all there for the salesperson as well. I mean, right. there are better ways, right? And I know AI can do some of this, but really no, because some of it is, it's strategic, it's higher level. Salespeople have to have someone with a brain they can talk to and figure out some things. So yeah, anyway, I could go on and on all day on that one, but we won't. So I think that it's just something for everyone to think about, like how much more capacity would your salespeople had if they had an assistant? So, mm-hmm. All right. Well, I could talk to you all day. I just find what you do fascinating. And I love the way that you do it because it's so specific and the matching is so important to get the right person. Because I have talked to people who do have EAs and they've been through a lot of them. I've been through a lot of them in my, you know, 20 plus years. I have a great one right now, but she's at capacity and we need to get her some help. So we always have to be thinking about that, right? How do we continue to let our people be at capacity so our businesses can grow? Before we get off, I have three questions for you. The first one is, what's a book that you think every CEO should read?
Yes. So I wanted to make a number of recommendations here, okay. I'm going to stick with one, The Lion Tracker's Guide to Life. I don't know if you've read that. It's not a business book, but it maybe should be. It's this idea. It's first off, the author is a wonderful storyteller, but he's an actual lion tracker in Africa. Yeah. And so he tells the story of how to do that. But there are these beautiful metaphors of like, you're not actually chasing a lion, you're tracking them, you're reading the signs, you're adapting as you go, you're trusting the process that you're going to get there. And it's impacted me a ton personally, but also professionally, like, just follow the first track. He says that a lot in the book, instead of as leaders feeling like we have to have all the answers figured out all the time.
Wow, I love that. And I had not heard of that book, so I will put it on my list.
So good. It's the one that we buy in bulk and give to friends.
Oh my goodness. That's good to know. Yeah. I do that too with a lot of books. I buy them and send them out to all the CEOs that I know. So I think that's a great idea. All right. What is a podcast that you listen to because it makes you think differently?
Have you listened to Founders? It's a guy, it's such a fascinating concept, and shoot, I'm forgetting his name. He loves to read. And so he reads autobiographies and biographies of famous leaders, and then he'll pull out themes from them and give notes. And so a lot of times he's even like reading from his notes or scripts from the book. But I listened to one about, I'll just call him Mr. because I don't remember his first name, Mr. Dyson, and the story of the Dyson vacuum, and which is now an empire, or Estee Lauder.
Yeah.
I love reading biographies in any shape or form, but I don't really have time for them right now. And so it's like candy with his podcast.
Oh, I love that. Okay. I'm going to look that one up for sure. We'll put these in the show notes as well. And what is it that every CEO needs to know to win in this market?
I think it is just be yourself and be authentic. And I think that involves including other humans in your journey, whatever that looks like. So I think only you can give yourself permission to receive the help that you need, but like consider this to be permission to give yourself permission. Like you're worth it. It's not a luxury. It can be strategic to get help in whatever form, and you're worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just something we don't do enough as leaders is ask for help and find the right support people. Dan Sullivan always says to think who, not how, right? How am I going to do this? No, who is going to help me do this, right? And I think that is really a superior way to think. Thank you so much, Paige, for being on the show today. It was so much fun to figure out that we knew each other from years ago.
It's a small world.
Wonderful watching you on your journey. Love what you've built. And let's just tell everyone where they can find you before we end today.
Yes, you can find more information about BASE and what we're doing and talking about at basehq.com. You can also find me at paigemcfeely.com, where just talking more about a lot of these same things and how to take care of yourself while still chasing your dreams.
And you have a book coming out, right?
Well, yes, eventually. It's in the works.
It's in the works, so we'll watch for that too. So thanks again for coming on the show. Let's keep in touch. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Alice.
If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.